Just before Christmas in 1859, only a month after he had finally published On the Origin of Species by Natural Selection, Charles Darwin found himself disturbed, even haunted, by the thought of his intellectual predecessors. He entered a state of extreme anxiety that had the strange effect of making him more than usually forgetful. It had been a cold winter. Though Darwin might have liked to linger on the sand walk with his children to admire the intricately patterned hoarfrost on the trees, he knew he had work to do, letters about his book to answer, criticisms to face. He had weathered the first blasts of the storm of censure in a sanatorium in Ilkley, where he had been taking the water cure, wrapped in wet sheets in hot rooms, the skin on his face dry and cracked with eczema. Since his return to his family home, Down House, now garlanded with Christmas holly, ivy, and mistletoe by his children, he had braced himself every morning against the sound of the postman's footsteps on the gravel outside his study window. The letters, he lamented to his wife Emma, came like swarms. Each new mailbag delivered to Down House brought letters voicing opprobrium, some veiled, some outspoken. A few contained praise. But though some reviewers might be expressing outrage, Darwin reassured himself hundreds of ordinary people were reading his book. On the first day of sale in November, the entire print run of 1,250 books had sold out. Even Moody's Select Lending Library had taken 500 copies. Now his publisher, John Murray, was about to publish a second edition. This time, Murray intended to print 3,000 copies, and he had agreed to let Darwin correct a few minor mistakes. Darwin was relieved. The mistakes embarrassed him. As readers and reviewers took up their positions for or against his book, Darwin began to keep a note of where everyone stood on the battleground. "We shall soon be a good body of working men," he wrote to his closest friend and confidant, the botanist Joseph Hooker, "and shall have, I am convinced, all young and rising naturalists on our side." The letter that launched Darwin into a prolonged attack of anxiety came from the Reverend Baden-Powell, the civilian professor of geometry at Oxford, a theologian and physicist who had been forthright in his support for the development theory for some time. The Reverend Baden-Powell was the father of Robert Baden-Powell, the founder of the Scouting Movement. The elderly professor was on the brink of being prosecuted for ecclesiastical heresy. Of all the letters in that day's pile, the one from Powell would be innocuous enough, Darwin assumed. He scanned it quickly, relieved to glimpse phrases like "masterly volume" and a few other words of praise. But Baden-Powell was not happy. Having finished with his compliments, the professor launched into a direct attack, criticizing Darwin not for being wrong, not for being an infidel, but for failing to acknowledge his predecessors. He even implied that Darwin had taken the credit for a theory that had already been argued by others, notably himself. This was not the first time Darwin had been accused of intellectual theft, but until now, the accusations had been tucked away in reviews and had been only implicit. How original is this book, people were clearly asking. How new is this idea of Mr. Darwin's? He might have protected himself better from charges of plagiarism, Darwin reflected fretfully, if he had only written a preface, as most scientists did when they published any controversial set of claims, a survey of all the ideas that had gone before. It gave the ideas a history and a context. It was a way of showing where the edges of other people's ideas finished and your own began. But he had not done so, though he had planned to, and now he was being accused of passing off the ideas of others as his own. As he sat reading and rereading Powell's letter, Darwin's excuses came thick and fast. He should have included a short preface, he wanted to tell Powell, but his book had been rushed. He had not been at all well. His closest friends, the botanist Joseph Hooker and the geologist Charles Lyell, had been badgering him to publish for years. Then, when Alfred Russel Wallace had sent him that alarming essay from the Malay Archipelago, showing that Wallace had worked out natural selection too, Hooker and Lyell had practically forced him to go straight into print. For months he had hardly slept for writing. He had never written so fast or for so long, and in all that rush, he had neglected to acknowledge those who had gone before. Besides, aware that he was a poor scholar of history, he had not been confident that he knew exactly who had gone before, or that he had the skills to describe their ideas accurately and fairly. They wrote in every language under the sun. Some of them were obscure, others mad. It would have taken years.